This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Noon hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here in the next minute. We're expected to be joined by Chief General Manager Brett Veach, obviously in Indianapolis. Combine underway, another year of the NFL scouting combine. And of course, these first couple of days, Cody, a lot of it is all about meeting with agents, trying to figure out, looking at a free agency and what kind of deals may or may not be able to get done for the future of the franchise. And let's go out there right now and welcome in the General Manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach. And I believe we've got Brett, we've got you right here. You're on with Cody and Gold in Kansas City. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
We're doing good. How are you? How's Indy? Does it is it kind of the same go around every year? Does it change at all for you?
Yeah, it's the same go around as every year. It's a lot of craziness to begin with, and we'll have a chance to get with our players' agents over the next few days, and then we'll kind of get right into the college aspect and getting to see the players work out and interview them. So it's exciting. I'm glad it's a few weeks after the Super Bowl, because as you guys know, I probably wouldn't want to be here right after that game. But now that I've flushed out of the system, excited again and looking forward to 2025 season, and it starts here with this offseason.
I think one of the biggest questions on Chiefs fans' minds are obviously regards to the future of Travis Kelce. Have you guys been in touch? How does that process work, and do you have a sense of where that's leaning in terms of his retirement or not retiring?
Yeah, that's been the number one question here. And look, I think the way we're handling this is, you know, in terms of deadlines, I've been hearing that a lot. I don't think there's a deadline with a guy like Travis. You know, his communication with us after the season is that he was playing, and we look forward to having him back next season. If something does transpire in the next few months where something other than him playing pops up, then, you know, we'll deal with it. But I would say that where we sit right now, that Travis will be back next year, and again, looking forward to having him back.
So Brett, can you have him back under the current contract, as far as, like, does it make business sense for you guys, or will you guys look to do something different with Travis's contract in order to make that fit better for the cap?
I think we're prepared to have him as is, and I think this is something that, you know, we've been going back and forth over the last, I guess we've had two and a half weeks now since the Super Bowl, and we've kind of gone through different scenarios, and we have different ways of creating space. But, you know, as far as Travis's contract, I think you know, we're prepared to have it as is, and we'll work around it and see how it goes. But we have a few different plans. And again, this all will depend on the players and their availability and who we're able to get in free agency. But I think we have different sources to create room and kind of operate. And I think our goal is to just put ourselves in a position when the draft does come around that we can just sit there and stay true to the board and pick the best player available. And it'll be a unique challenge like every offseason. And this is why the NFL is so great. And our challenge is we have a lot of high-priced players and a lot of players that are number one in their position. And then, you know, we pick so far in the draft. So And we've been doing that for a few years, which is a good thing, but it's also makes it challenging every off season show up some of those weekends. So look, we have a couple different scenarios that we'll run through, but as far as the long-winded answer to your question about Travis, I think, you know, we'll carry him as is, and we have some different opportunities to create space with some different players.
I guess between that and the rumors that you guys are interested in bringing back Trey Smith, does the cap number going up as much as it did have a bigger impact on that? As in, like, well, it's a lot easier to carry Travis's number if the cap's going to go up that amount.
Well, I mean, listen, I think that was certainly helpful, right? You know, all offseason, Clark does a good job of giving us a number to work with, or I should say every summer as we go into to a year. We typically play on the conservative side. So I would say that in all of our models in the weeks leading to that announcement, we were working off a 270 model. And so having that, I guess it's 277.1 that can get up to 280 was certainly a plus, and it will certainly help us in our pursuit of retaining our players. And as you mentioned, Cody, Trey would be at the top of that list, I'm sure.
We're talking to the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach, here on Cody and Gold. We look back, and after that Bucs Super Bowl, everybody noticed there was a huge shift in how you guys approached that offseason, revamping the offensive line. Seeing how things went in the Super Bowl, there's an expectation, I think, or thought from some fans out there that, all right, what's the big shift, if there is one, to kind of address that again this go-around? Should that be something that Chiefs fans expect? It seems like you've always had a big move after maybe a loss like this.
Yeah, I think every offseason, I think when we just take a step back, and I would say most teams operate in a similar fashion. I think, you know, your first box you have to check is getting a quarterback, and certainly we're blessed that we have the best of the best there. And I think, you know, if you look back of what we've done over the years, I think it's always going to be offensive line and defensive line. And this goes back to, you know, signing Joe Tooney when he's a free agent, going after Trent Williams, getting Orlando Brown, Frank Clark, Chris Jones, even Mike Dana last year. I think we always are going to exhaust our resources on the fronts, and this will be no different. The Tampa Bay one was a little different in the fact that I think we kind of needed an entire offensive line. You know, I think more recently it's been just trying to get that left tackle position settled. But needless to say, I mean, that's a priority for us, and the defense line will be a priority for us. And I think that's kind of how we always operate it here. And it just gets more challenging the longer you go on and are winning, just because the resources are less in both money and you know, where you pick. So that's where the big challenges are, but looking forward to getting after it and hopefully come up with something creative and, you know, solidifying both sides of the football there.
When you look at what the Hollywood Brown offered you guys last year, I think you'd mentioned in your press availability some interest in bringing him back. What would be appealing in bringing Hollywood Brown back, and what has he added to the offense if you're able to do something with him?
Well, yeah, certainly. And I think we were all excited. Never got to see what we wanted to see in early on in our time at St. Joe's, just the trio of Hollywood, Rasheed, and Xavier. And we were kind of hoping they would grow into a dominant trio there. And Xavier did his part, and he came on strong at the end, much like Rasheed did. But unfortunately, we never really got to see all three of those guys out there. And we did get Hollywood back late in the season, and Xavier did take that step up. But, you know, the reality of it is, and hopefully he's healthy, Rasheed's our most gifted guy in terms of, I mean, he has a complete skill set. You know, he has more vertical ability than people think, but he's such a dominant player in that intermediate game. He's almost like a running back. And so if you added him with Xavier and Hollywood, you really get, you know, the entire skill set that you're looking for in regards to long game, intermediate game, and then the short game. And all three of those guys had elements of doing each one. Now, each guy does something a little bit different and unique, but certainly, you know, it'd be great to get Hollywood back here, and you know, we'll have communication with him. I mean, he actually has the same agent as Trey, so that will be a good conversation to have. And but I think if we can get those three guys back, that would be something that we'd be interested in, and hopefully we get to see all the things that we were excited about and Chiefs fans were excited about that never really came to be just because of the injury situation. But getting Rasheed back and getting both those guys back, and then, as you mentioned, having Xavier take that step up late in the season, I think, you know, it would be a pretty cool trio to have.
Brett, you mentioned Rashee Rice there. Any indication on I don't know if you've had any conversations with the league on where that could be heading from, of course, availability or legal standpoint in terms of last off season?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't. And as I mean, the league's pretty consistent in how they handle this. And once it goes through the court system, which I'm sure it will at some point, they'll come in and they'll be in communication with us, and we'll deal with that, you know, when that time comes. I think on the positive side, you know, he had a really scary injury last year. The good news for us is that the ACL was intact, and that was really the best of a worst case scenario, right? And I've got to see him now the last few months, and even prior to the Super Bowl, he was in the facility, and he's probably ahead of where he needs to be in regards to the rehab. So I don't know if we'll see him in the off season, but I think our trainers feel really good about him, you know, starting camp and getting up to speed, and then whatever happens on the league side, we'll deal with. But we're certainly super positive about the health progress.
Speaking to Chief General Manager Brett Veach here on Cody and Gold, I know that like everyone's going to ask you about tackle and how to kind of solve that. I guess just from like a bigger picture perspective, can you find as an organization a long-term left tackle without moving up in a draft?
Well, I think it's like any position. I mean, there's always guys that you hit on late and that become really good players. I mean, Trey Smith was unique because of the health situation, and we got him in the sixth, but we've gotten guys like Legarius Sneed late and Isaiah Pacheco late. I mean, so yeah, I mean, there's always guys that I think over the years that get picked in the mid rounds or late rounds that go on to develop and have a great career. And again, I don't think we'll be scared to throw numbers at this. And I think the one thing that we want to do, if at all possible, is, you know, what we work hard to put that board in place. And when we have a guy and we feel like, again, if we're picking at 31 or if we move up and pick a little higher, I mean, we want to be excited about a guy that like Xavier last year that we know can come in and play and produce right away. And ideally that would be at the left tackle. Sometimes the numbers don't work out the way you want them to, but there will be opportunities to draft and develop guys. And our coaching staff has done a great job of that on both sides of the football. So there's always guys in different pockets that we like and feel have upside. So again, I think that would probably go back to just throwing numbers at that position and feeling good about a prospect, whether that is a guy that if we're able to get one in the first round, plug in and play, or if we get a guy, feel good about the long-term upside.
How much of this offseason will be still trying to prep Kingsley Suamataia to maybe develop at left tackle?
I think that's a possibility. I do think that the coaches were really encouraged about his guard play. He had one game in there, but this is something that the public can't see, but in the practices leading up to the Super Bowl and the playoffs, I think you kind of saw the light turn on there. And in our individual and group work, you know, one of the things in our exit meeting that I talked to Coach Heck about was, I mean, he was really excited about the potential for Kingsley taking a next step up in his quality of play next year, but he thought he had a really, really big upside at guard too. So I think we'll have some flexibility with him. Not going to rule anything out with any of these guys in regards to position flex, but you know, he's a guy that potentially could transition to guard and be a long-term solution at guard.
Last one for you, Brett, then we'll let you go. We're talking to the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach. Running back, we know this past year you had the injury, of course, with Pacheco. You guys were able to bring back in Kareem Hunt, and he provided you guys quite a bit throughout the season. Do you feel overall, though, as you head into next year, do you need to get more explosive at that position?
I think anytime you can get more, even at receiver, you know, if you have a chance to add a player that adds an explosive element to the game, I think you're always going to be interested in. And, you know, the running back position was unique last year with the injury and then Kareem coming in here and giving us a really big boost middle of the season. But the good thing is I think this draft is really, you know, the one position on the offensive side that I think it's deep is at the running back position. I think when you look at this draft board right now, I think defensive end is very deep and talented. Defensive tackle is deep and talented. I think the corners are above average in regards to numbers. Same thing with linebackers, probably a little lower than you want to be on the offensive line. And at quarterback, we don't have to worry about quarterback, which is a good thing. But the running back is good. I think it's much deeper than last year. So I think we'll have a chance to, as you mentioned, add potentially another dynamic element there out of the backfield.
Brett, really appreciate the time. We'll let you get back to it there in Indianapolis. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yep, you bet, guys. Thanks.
There you go. That's the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach, with us here on 96.5 The Fan. Obviously,
plenty of places
things
to start with. Yeah, where do you want to go first?
Let's start at the beginning. Let's go back to the beginning there on the Travis Kelce front. I mean, as he said, like, things can change, but that absolutely sounds like they're very confident that Travis Kelce, even if it takes even if it takes months from now, right? He said there is not a deadline, which had been kind of reported, that there's not a drop dead date that they have to have the clear answer. They feel confident that he's coming back.
It sounds like, yes, first, I guess it appears that he is coming back, and that was the report from Diana Russini, and everyone seems to be operating under, unless something changes, Travis Kelce is returning to this organization.
Yeah, for one more year.
But there's no deadline, because it sounds like they're willing to eat his cap hit. Like, the fact that they are, and maybe they always were, it didn't make it sound like the increase in the cap was part of the reason why. And you and I were talking about this as it related to the cap yesterday, Gold, which is, if you can afford it, the option is always take the cap number, eat the cap number, don't push these problems into the future. It sounds like they are at least considering or very willing, based on the way Brett Veach said, to take the full $19 million cap hit for Travis Kelce this season. And if that's the case, well, then there is no deadline. I don't need an answer by March 12th if I'm not planning on signing you to an extension or pushing those things into the future or moving the money around. If I'm just willing to pay you $19 million, well, then I don't need it. I don't have a deadline anymore.
Yeah, so I think
that's interesting.
That part was interesting. The other aspect kind of tied into that, though, just from the financial end of it, is on the Trey Smith path. You know, that you asked Brett Veach about the cap going up, and, you know, they projected, what did he say, 270 or something, and it's 277. It could be as high as 281 in terms of cap space. So that's like a pleasant surprise, basically, when it comes to the cap number being elevated. And that tied into the Trey Smith answer a little bit. Like, maybe that's why there's a little bit more optimism that Trey Smith could be retained, just because of that dollar amount going up. Now, I'll still always say, but the cap went up for Chicago as well. The cap went up for Tennessee as well. But that's something, when you have a player in Trey Smith that
already likes being with
the
organization and wants to stay,
and they have it sounds like a decent relationship with his agent that represents multiple players on the roster right now, or on the last year's roster.
Yeah, and that helps too. And I understand that anybody could just pay him a little bit more for the same argument. But like you said, if he had a number in mind and he wants to be in Kansas City, which by all accounts he does want to be in Kansas City, they're not hiding behind the fact that they want Trey Smith back. They're also not hiding behind the fact that their plan is not Kingsley Suamatii attack.
Yeah, I think that was pretty clear.
At all. He's like, well, I wouldn't rule it out, but like, he looked pretty good at guard, and we think he's got a nice future at guard, and, you know, guard's a possibility.
Yeah, he referenced guard three times.
Yeah. And so, like, if you're going to bring up guard three different times, we can all be in the same boat. Tackle ain't happening for Kingsley Suamatii anymore.
But if it's guard and you
want to bring back Trey Smith, well, then Tooney is the one that comes into play here, uh-huh, where he's a swing guard this year. We wait on Tooney for a following year, and then our down the road long-term plan is Kingsley either taking over for Joe Tooney as he gets older, or if this deal doesn't happen with Trey,
and that's
Kingsley at right guard is probably what the answer is there. Then they continue to try to solve left tackle. It means, for as much as we're saying revamp of the offensive line, they're really only trying to solve one opening this year. It's left tackle.
Well, and that was
center, left, right, you know, like, they have answers there in right tackle.
And that's when we asked him about the Bucs Super Bowl and how they revamped. And he explained how they view that much different than this go around, what you were alluding to there, that time around they needed to redo the entire offensive line. They don't feel they have to redo this entire offensive line. And also they have guys that prevent them from doing that, right? Juwan Taylor's contract at right tackle, he's not going anywhere. Creed Humphrey, of course, is not going anywhere. He's locked up, best center in football. So there's some other pieces that are just there. So they're not revamping the entire offensive line the way they were. Now, he did acknowledge draft-wise, he was going through just kind of how they view positional depth and everything. He said offensive line is not the deepest offensive line draft that they've had over the years. He said, you know, defensive end, very deep draft, running back, pretty deep draft, but offensive line wise, not so much, which might go into when you think about their left tackle plan, whether it's a veteran in free agency or the DJ Humphreys path and whatever, like, don't be surprised if that's, you know, where it's at. I know we have to be careful with smokescreen stuff as we get closer to the draft and everything. We're still so far away from that, but, you know, the left tackle at 31 just doesn't seem all that likely.
Very. Yeah. No, I don't think so.
If you think it's not a deep position, well, then It's a trade up. One.
The only argument is that, like, if everyone else thinks that, there might be a lot of other positions to go. Like, people think there's a lot of defensive linemen who can go early and corners who can go early. So, like, maybe you still can get your left tackle in that spot. I want them to solve the problem for good right now. But if it's an offseason in which that doesn't fundamentally make sense, well, forcing it doesn't solve your problem either, right? It just puts you in a hole. The same as when you're desperate. Like, when you're desperate in the NFL and you're trying to do whatever you can to solve it, you run into those problems. They tried to, a couple of years ago, as you point out, solve left tackle for good. They tried to do that by signing Trent Williams as a free agent to come to Kansas City. It didn't work out. He wanted to be back in San Francisco, and he's continued to push money there on, of course, the number there, and have tried to do it. But, like, if it's not the offseason to solve left tackle, well, then, sad to say, you might have to do stopgap again. I don't want that to be the case. You and I don't want that to be the case. But unless there, and I tried to look on some teams, I was looking for the, you know, this works, like, defensive tackles, unhappy, and, you know, he might be traded in the final year of his deal. Unless that rumor kicks up about some left tackle I'm not hearing about yet, you're not hearing about yet, yeah, I mean, it might have to be DJ Humphreys or trade up. Like I said, there's guys, as always, at 17 to 24. But, like, I understand he's like, well, like any position, I can find a left tackle in the fourth, maybe. But, I mean, he knows like we know. What are the odds you're going to find it there, Gold? What are the odds you're going to find your left tackle of the future in the third round this year? They might take one. They might take another tackle.
Nobody's saying not to take a lineman later. It's just, you know, you already had a developmental guy in Kingsley, and the chance of taking another developmental guy in back-to-back years, just, I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense with a premium pick at least. But yeah, the two most telling things out of that entire conversation with Brett Veach was the Travis Kelce, like the confidence level that they feel great about his chances basically of coming back. And then Kingsley multiple times referencing guard and the coaches thought during that
he mentioned
prep,
guard,
prep week.
He mentioned tackle, and I asked him specifically about tackle.
The week leading up to the Super Bowl, like they thought maybe the light turned on a little bit for him, I think was the phrase that he used when it came to that practice week or week before the Super Bowl.
It certainly sounds like, too, from his conversations that he even floated wide receiver in there to get more explosive. I know, Goldwyn, you asked him about the running back, where it feels like, just in terms of what he brought up with depth, defensive line is the deepest of any position is line, whether it's edge, tackle,
it is,
whatever the case is. Then you look at wide receiver. It seems like the options that they'd really look into, at least, again, based on what Refuge said, defensive line, edge, wide receiver, in any of those picks in the first three rounds. So I think we're not going to expect it, but I think that it makes a lot of sense based on what he said, that that's a direction they'll decide to go in, or tackle if they really like a guy at 31, but expect maybe D-line, you know, wide receiver, take advantage of best available.
A lot of times when it's like that, I would just tell you, spend your free agency dollars where you can't get it in the draft, and then draft what you can get in the draft. So, you know, like, we have all said that we are interested in Charles and Minnehue, bring him back, but I don't know. Maybe you don't need to spend your free agency dollars there. If there are immediate contributors on the defensive line everywhere in every round in the draft versus if there's no help in offensive line, you know, maybe paying Trey Smith's not such a bad idea if you can't get that help in the draft. You know, like, I understand why they would come to that conclusion as a group and why they would think about it in that perspective, because it makes sense, because, you know, buy what you can't draft and kind of, you know, go that direction. It just kind of makes sense. I mean, I thought it was a really interesting conversation with Brett Veach.
We had plenty more things to ask him.
We only had a certain amount of time.
I wanted to ask about Juwan Taylor a little bit. We only had 10 minutes or so. We actually went a little bit over that, actually. So,
we just kept going?
I don't know.
Nobody told us to stop.
We're trying to respect the time as well. We appreciate it.
I don't respect anyone's time. I love wasting it.
But, no, there was obviously a ton more even. I feel like we got to some of the main questions that fans had when it came to this offseason, and that's why we started the conversation with Travis Kelce, because I think that was the first thing on a lot of people's mind. And I don't know about you, how can you not feel way better about that whole situation? So
maybe we can do a deeper conversation tomorrow, because there's just so much to get into as it relates to that conversation and the things that are going on with the Chiefs and the Royals and everyone
else. Reminder, Andy Reid will join the drive this afternoon as well.
Like, we're gonna have to talk tomorrow, I think, the bigger pick conversation, now that it's clear he's coming back. Like, you know, what expectations start to look like for him.
Right.
And are we actually excited about this? Because I think when it's spoken in hypothetical, it's easier to be like, well, they'd be fine without Travis, or he's going to be the same old Travis again. Like, we probably have to get deeper into, now that they're discussing it, not like it's a possibility, as in it would be shocking if it went the other way. Right. Like, at this point, Brett Veach would be like, he'd have to be on a beach in Maui and then all of a sudden be like, you know what, actually?
I mean, here,
I've been telling everyone I'm coming back, but now I'm not interested.
This was just the, real quick, again, the 30-second answer that he gave on Travis Kelce.
That's been the number one question here. And look, I think the way we're handling this is, you know, in terms of deadlines, I've been hearing that a lot. I don't think there's a deadline with a guy like Travis. You know, his communication with us after the season is that he was playing and we look forward to having him back next season. If something does transpire in the next few months where something other than him playing pops up, then, you know, we'll deal with it. But I would say that where we sit right now, that Travis will be back next year. And again, looking forward to having him back.
There you go. I mean, that's all you need to hear if you're worried as a Chiefs fan. That should tell you everything.
I mean, again, he's just pretty much saying, like, barring some unforeseen thing that,
he's
like,
back.
Travis Kelce is going to be a member of the Chiefs in 2025.
They would be surprised, it sounds like. You know,
Like Travis just told him he's going to be back. He just hasn't made the official. He'll make the official announcement, like a smart business person. I believe Travis Kelce would be a smart individual. He'll make the official announcement in a couple of weeks on an episode of New Heights.
Yeah,
Travis Kelce addresses his future tomorrow on the newest edition of New Heights. And that's, by the way, what he should do. That's what Gold, I'll be honest with you. When I'm quitting this show, I'm not going to make the announcement through the Kansas City Star. I'll be making it on this show. Tomorrow on Cody and Gold, Cody says what he's doing. So he's like, wait, was it a possibility he's leaving? Like, like how Kling did it. Kling did it on their show.
This is a little bit more of a, it's going to be a long, it's going to be
20 years from now.
It'll be a conversation more in July, of course, when you guys get out to camp. But
me quitting or something else?
No. But Andy, we know how Andy runs his camps. Do you expect, I know that we talked about VG, you know, it could be a little bit later. They're going to let Travis do his thing. Does Andy intentionally give Travis time
he's
during
never
camp?
Has. No, he will Travis be. Travis going to show up to work like everyone else.
He will be
crazy.
At camp.
I just wanted to ask.
That's how it'll be. The dollar amount thing is still interesting. You know, they said they have other areas they think they can make the cap work and all that, but. Is that means they're not planning on converting any of that or anything? That's how I took it.
If they bring him back, then Trey Smith as well. Does that also take him not out of the equation? But how do they manage that? Even with the salary cap bump?
To me, if they do that, then it totally tells you that they are going
to move on.
Well, no. If somehow they pulled both of those off, it would tell me that then left tackle they're not signing any of the free agent left tackles.
And they're drafting one then essentially.
They're going to go DJ Humphries or something else,
or maybe Now, obviously, maybe Juwan Taylor, you know. I mean, it's not Kingsley. The only thing we know is that I asked about Kingsley at left tackle, and he mentioned guard three times. Like, this is not a read between the lines situation. I think we can pretty safely assume that their plan right now is him at left or at a guard position either this year or down the road.
Coming up next, we'll talk about one rule change the NFL is heavily considering. We'll also head out to Arizona again and check in with our guy Josh Vernier and get his perspective on maybe what we've seen from Michael Massey so far in spring training as well, right here on 96.5 The Fan. 12:30 here in Kansas City. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We're going to head out to Arizona in about 10 minutes or so, check in with our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. If you missed it earlier in the day, we had Jack Caglione on the show. That interview podcasted up on the Odyssey app and, of course, on 96.5 The Fan's website as well if you want to hear from the Royals' top prospect. But we'll check in with Vern a little bit and talk about the first couple games of this automated strike zone as well as Michael Massey getting some work in left field and what Vern
for the first time
has
today,
seen
right?
from that. Yeah, I believe that is the first time, I think. So we'll ask Vern about that in just a little bit. And if you missed any portion of the Brett Veach interview, we'll bring that back to you around 1:35 or so today on the show as we talked one-on-one with the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs. In the meantime, though, the NFL meetings, that's really what's happening this time of year. Meetings, competition committee meetings, and then in March they'll have more meetings.
My
and
nightmare. I
more
hate
voting.
Meetings. God.
And, yeah, more votes and everything. So one of the changes that they're considering, and I think this one's just going to happen, and it's something that was very evident honestly, like 3 weeks into the season with the dynamic kickoff, which was, hey, is there enough of a deterrent for teams not to just kick it in the end zone still? And it got better as the year went on. Kickoffs were up. I mean, that's a fact. That's how bad it had gotten. They were up 50%. But the rule change they're considering is making the touchback penalty 35-yard line.
Well, you want to get them 70 or 80%, you're going to do that.
You kick a touchback, it's not just the 30, it becomes the 35-yard line. And if your first reaction is, well, that's crazy, just giving a team the ball at the 35. Exactly. That's the point of the rule deterrent. You are encouraging them not to have touchbacks, so you don't give the team the ball at the 35. In the regular season, I was like, yeah, maybe even the 40. People push back on that. 35 is a very fair yard line, I think, to consider to try to deter touchbacks by also not making it so they want to go 60 yards by putting it at the 40.
Yeah, and I'd be fine if it was the 40. I'm not going to lie, because I want that to be a part of the game, because the truth is there's only so many things that exist in a game anyway, right? And I think the part of the reason, this is stupid, part of the reason they want to save kickoffs is commercials. So if you want to know if they're interested in saving kickoffs, they are, for a financial reason, right? I like it because some of the best moments in NFL history are the Music City Miracle, and you think of these big kick, Devin Hester in a Super Bowl. Like, some of the most exciting plays that can exist in the NFL is a kick return for a touchdown. And because kickers got so good, kicking and kickoffs were eliminated from football. They were done. They didn't matter anymore. They made it matter a little bit this previous year, while allowing it to not be a concussion fest, which was their real concern, because they could easily just make kickoffs happen by making them kick at the 20. They could scoot them back, right? Force everyone to go run at each other full speed again and do it like the rest. They're not going to do that because they don't want people getting hurt. The 35 to me is a proper deterrent. And if this doesn't work, get rid of them. No more kickoffs. Everyone starts at the 30 and we just watch offense and defense play. And we don't waste the 4 seconds, the performative nonsense that is kicking the ball out of the end zone. This seems like a fairly obvious decision. I'd be surprised. I'm surprised some of you are against it, I guess. Like, I'm surprised that anyone thinks it's too much of a deterrent. Don't you want kickoffs, or do you just want them gone?
Yeah, and if you're interested, you want the old way. Well, we just know they're not going back to that.
They're not
going to
let people beat each other's head.
Yeah, I mean, from a just sheer entertainment perspective, yeah, I wish the same rules we had in 2010 or whatever it was, or 2015 even, as recently as that, for kickoffs. But we know they're not. It's either this works or there is no kickoffs. And that's why last year was so important to see if it helped. And it did. You know, I was very skeptical about it. I still don't love it. I still don't think it's like, oh my gosh, the most exciting play. But maybe bumping it to the 35 will also lead to more returns and the potential for it. What was funny to me still about the whole dynamic kickoff stuff is the way special teams coordinators talked about it and all this. You would have thought they all had this master plan and the nuclear codes and nobody knows what we're about to do. We're experimenting with all these amazing things. I didn't see a damn thing that was all that different than a normal kickoff return. You know, we might have our safety kickoff. We might have a so-and-so return kick.
The Chiefs,
weren't alone. A lot of teams were talking about
bringing in LRZs, a rugby player, knows about leverage.
That was a fun couple months.
Honestly, I appreciate conversations that allow us to continue moving things forward. As a reminder, we have a signed Larice Riis-Sammet helmet that'll be in the Cody and Gold garage sale coming up in June. So, you know, limited edition. I don't know how many more other Chiefs signed LRZ helmets will ever exist. If we're being, this might be the only one.
I think he signed again with Jacksonville. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah, he signed again. They're still calling him a wide receiver. He's on their active roster right now. I don't know what that means.
But active in what?
Well, I mean, he's not in their practice. He signed to their...
No, I know. I'm just being like, active in what, though? You know, other than playing.
Their actual roster, I guess, is probably maybe a better way of putting it, at least for the moment. But it's... Yeah, I think that...
Someone wants to know, Cody, what is the most exciting play in football history to you?
I don't know. I mean, I have to really...
A couple come to mind right away.
Like...
Music City Miracle.
I mean, that's one of them. That's absolutely
Frank Wycheck and all that. That's one that I think is the first thing that comes to
my
mind.
The first thing I mentioned, right?
And given our age and stuff, I'll be honest. Like, if something happened in the 70s, that's not going to be my answer.
Yeah, like, my answer is not going to be Dwight Clark in the back of the end zone, right? Some of ours are going to be Chiefs related, like Chip Watts.
Music City Miracle is
Hester
still...
Hester return.
Hester return is a good one. Of course, yeah, as a Chiefs fan, you're going to say Jet Chip Wasp or any of that kind of stuff. But in NFL history... Yeah, I would put the Music City Miracle at the very top of the list for me.
Well,
we did just get
two
done
days in a row.
To
Brett Veach told us it's no offensive linemen, so we'll see what this brings.
He didn't like the depth.
I know.
So that means Drew found another mock draft. Where are we going with this one?
Guess what? It's another offensive lineman, Mel Kiper Jr.
I've heard of him. Yeah,
mm-hmm. A lot of people have. Seems like there's a theme going on with offensive linemen. Maybe they don't know too much about what, or maybe they don't think the same way that Brett Veach is thinking. This one's new, though. Nobody from Texas, nobody from Oregon. Somebody from Minnesota, Ariante Ursary, offensive tackle from the Golden Gophers. Ursary, 6'6", 330. He's a big boy.
Yes, he is. All right.
Kiper says he shows ample power and movement skills on tape. He also allowed just 4 sacks and over 39 college starts. So numbers-wise, not quite as, I guess, prolific as Connolly Jr., who Kuiper has going earlier in the draft. It is interesting, though. Mm. Minnesota, not really a throwing team by any stretch of the imagination. They've had quarterback issues over the last few years with P.J. Fleck as their coach. So how he would transition to a more pass-heavy offense would be interesting, but
this kid is from Kansas City, Missouri. I wonder if that's why.
I like the first text. We've established how long are the arms. First text.
We don't know yet.
6 and 330.
But no, this kid is from KC Mo, so that's why I think this one's in. It's worked out really well, Cody. I know you're a big fan of the hometown picks. So
sometimes
I know you like the hometown picks.
It depends on the look. Maybe I'm sour because Bubba Starley and some others that have not worked out great.
I wonder, Cody, if you wouldn't like this.
I wish they had drafted Albert Pujols when the Royals back in the day.
I feel like you wouldn't like this pick. You know why, Cody? Because while he is a hometown favorite,
he does have long arms. Sorry,
Luther Burden has not selected in the first round of Kuiper's mock. So they could take Luther Burden, but instead they take an offensive tackle for Kuiper.
That's where I would draw the line. We know history and what the odds are of getting a good left tackle at 31 who can start right away. I got plenty of evidence of wide receivers that are successful at 31. So, tons and tons and tons. And I know it's selfish, but Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, and Luther Burden, 3 wide receivers on a rookie deal and Travis Kelce on $19 million. That interests me.
Yeah, so
I am interested.
The name is interesting. I would say I'm surprised to see him not in a first round. Now, if eventually,
starting to fall out according to
if it becomes the consensus thought, though, well, then like a month ago, if I would have said, oh, he's going to be there at 31, you would have said, well, hell yeah, I'm going to draft him. But if eventually everybody agrees he's not a first round pick, then I don't want to just take him at 31 just because we know him locally. You know what I mean? Like, I understand
the thought. Really talented.
Yeah. Look, this combine this week will be big for him. It'll be huge. If he performs well, all of a sudden he's back on board with everybody in the first round. It wasn't a good final year for him. I thought he wouldn't slip past 21. This is a mock draft. Mel Kiper is going to do about 20 of these before we get to draft day in Green Bay in the end of April. But if he's there at 31, that tells you that like everybody probably thinks there's a problem.
His mock is interesting because he doesn't have very many wide receivers, period. Tetero McMillan, Bink thinks he could go in the top 5 or top 10.
Maybe he's waiting for the combine.
He's going at 22 in Bink's in Kuiper's mock.
I wonder if Kuiper's waiting for the combine for some of these skill position players to see what their 40 times are and you know, cone drill, etc. Like, I wonder if that's what he's waiting on.
There was a notable, your boy Genty gets picked 6th by the Raiders. In Kuiper's mock.
Okay. And then top 10 pick.
And then Shador goes to the Jets at 7.
So,
And Cam Ward goes to the Browns at 2.
So, okay, that doesn't shock. The Cam Ward one doesn't shock
Sanders
me.
Sanders falling to 7, though.
Going back to, like, your thought on, like, when somebody falls, that means, like, it can mean there's something wrong, and I can find probably just as many cases of when they dropped and they should have dropped and they weren't good players. But, I mean, you know, like, Rodgers and Dez Bryant and, like, there are plenty of players who like dropped in the draft kind of unexpectedly who ended up being really good NFL players.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is the most outlier
DK
of all outliers,
Metcalf.
But I hear you.
No, yeah. I know. But like, well, and that's why I mentioned Dez Bryant. Like, he fell down to the 30s and people weren't expecting that originally. Look, again, I told you, I can find just as many that are bad.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to pretend to you that like there aren't examples of ones like Brady Quinn fell unexpectedly in the draft. That's the opposite of Aaron Rodgers, right? Where it went really horribly. Yeah.
I'll just be curious, like, does that become the consensus thought heading to the draft? Because before everybody would have said, like back in September, oh, for sure, top 15 pick, top 10 pick, no brainer.
I know.
And then he did not have a good year. We know that, but can everybody fall back in love with him during the combine? Maybe so. But be interesting if the kid out of Minnesota, though, is from Kansas City, Missouri. And he has long arms, Cody. You should be thrilled with that. Massive humanity with a broad chest and long arms. Fires direct jabs.
I just hate when, like, with offensive linemen, it's always the opposite. Like, why the hell is he available at 31 is the same answer I asked about Connolly. If you were available,
he's got tight hips, Cody.
What?
Tight hips.
Oh, that's why he's available at 31?
Tight hips.
Tight hips.
Limiting his ability to open and recover when beaten.
Oh, no.
Those tight hips. That's the problem, man. You
how
know?
Do they determine said tightness in hips?
I don't know, man, but low average pop, you know, those are the kind of things you got to look for.
Mm-hmm. It's weak. Mm-hmm. Weak and can't turn? Pass.
There you go. Yeah. All right, let's head out to Surprise, Arizona. Check in with our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. Of course, Thursday night, he'll have his hot stove show at 6 o'clock here on 96.5 The Fan. Vern, we appreciate you helping us get Jack Caglione on the show today. It was good to catch up. Cody did not ask him about his dating life because
we found out he was engaged.
We did find out he was already engaged, so we moved on from that question.
Well, I heard a few rumors that, okay, you didn't ask about his relationship, but you were asking about, I don't even want to say it.
His bat size?
Yeah. Wood?
Hey, Cody's talking about ounces and who had the bigger bat and all this stuff, and it got a little awkward.
Well, he does have, I did this yesterday. I'm not trying to sexualize the young man. All right, so never mind. I'm glad you guys got him on.
Yeah, thank you.
Very polite young man, yes.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. All right.
Although it was strange yesterday, before he sat down with you guys earlier, you know, watching him out there practicing his bunting. Do you think over under 1.5 bunts in his big league career?
Under, I hope. I mean, I don't ever want him bunting.
Yeah, there's no bunt. No bunt.
Because Bobby has squared the bunt once in his professional career, and he says once in his life. That was his rookie campaign. I can't imagine Jack Caglione ever squaring out, but I will give him credit. Most guys, after they run the bases and work on their bunting, they just head back to the clubhouse. But like an upstanding rookie, he stuck around with the coaches to pick up all of the baseballs that were lying around and all of the junk that the veterans left behind.
Wow. So, I like that.
Kid,
I like
the
that.
The kid understands his role despite having already $1 million in the bank.
I love that. Now, a few days ago, or late last week, I guess, I asked you about the automated ball strike zone testing in spring training. It's been a couple games, I understand. But have you noticed anything with that and how that's going?
Yeah, a few things. First of all, if the fans don't already know that they're going to love it, they're going to love it. It's the rare like yesterday's game out in Surprise, there were maybe 3,000 people here. If you were walking around outside the stadium, you would have no idea there was a baseball game going on. It was just so absolutely dead. Believe it or not, in a game between the Royals and the Sacramento A's. But once there's a challenge levied by the pitcher, the hitter, or the catcher, it really does, kind of spark the interest. It does bring an excitement into the game. And again, if anybody's watched tennis, they'll certainly understand that. But the thing that makes me chuckle, at least the first week of this ABS, is watching Salvador Perez, who successfully challenged a pitch yesterday. It was well up and out of the zone. He 2 days ago. Taps his helmet, and it's ultimately called the ball, and he takes his base. Salvi, so very apologetic. after he challenged, he looks to the umpire and apologizes and says, you know, the catcher's glove was just up a little bit too high. I had to do it. I'm sorry. But keep in mind, Salvi's the guy that hated framing pitches because he felt like it was deceiving the umpire, felt like it was cheating the game and ruining relationships that Salvi has worked so hard to build with these umpires. So, honestly, a lot of these veterans, especially the catchers, they need to get their feet wet with this and understand that, you know, you might have to mend a few more fences with these umpires when you successfully get a pitch overturned. Although it has been interesting watching some of these umpires after the big screen shows whether or not it was in or out of the strike zone. They turn their microphone back on. They look to the crowd and they make the announcement of what the count is now. Some of these umpires have a little bit of attitude about it. They flip the microphone on and say, as expected, it was a ball.
Ooh. See, I like that. I've always made the argument.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Sometimes I think professional sports, because we're worried that like how much money they're making, like I want personality. Like, if you're like, right, I told you it was a ball, well, then I like that kind of attitude back and forth because the players certainly give it. My argument, Vernon, I don't know if you'd ever agree this far. My argument on the pitch framing is the same as like flopping in soccer, the NBA. I genuinely think you should get the opposite call if you frame something outside of like 6 inches. Like this Little League frame job where it's like in the dirt and you're dragging it up, like you should be fined by Major League Baseball if it's an egregiously bad frame, as in the ball's a foot outside.
Finding them might be a little difficult. I remember having conversations with Mike Matheny, who was a big fan of framing. In fact, he always felt as if his career would have been, you know, 3-4 years shorter if it wasn't for framing. He thought he did a very good job, ultimately leading to multiple gold gloves for the former Royal skipper. Now, to me, I don't know. flopping to me is just in a league of its own. But maybe I'm off base. Maybe I'm too much of a baseball honk, and I like the whole if you're not cheating, you're not trying to me. Flopping, whether it's football, soccer, or basketball, is just off-putting for a fan.
We're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. What about Michael Massey? He's working in at left field for the first time, huh?
Yeah, and got a new haircut today, so maybe that is swaying my opinion. But I'll tell you what, Massey looks as lean as, best shape of his life. He's still a young man, so it shouldn't be all that difficult for him to do it. Looks terrific. Excited to see him out there. Honestly, at least watching out here on the backfield, I would say that Michael Massey's a little bit ahead of Jonathan India in the second baseman moonlighting in left field battle that's going on out here in Surprise. But speaking of left field, it is, I don't think it's funny, but it is somewhat surprising at the ease in which so many Royals fans have kind of booted MJ Melendez to the curb out there in left field. Now, understanding that he could still bounce over to right field and maybe you see a platoon with him and Renfro if one or both don't get off to a great start. But let's remember that for a majority of the season, MJ Melendez was a league average or better left fielder, whether that's his arm or his reads off the bat. Yesterday made an outstanding running catch, leaping at the wall to rob some A's hitter of extra bases. I still believe that the best defense that this team could put out there is MJ Melendez in left, Renfro in right, Massey at second base, and Garcia at third base, which would leave Jonathan India as your designated hitter. India, the metrics don't speak fondly of him at second base, and a lack of opportunities. I really don't want to judge him yet in left field. The question with Massey today is going to be his arm. You would love to see an opportunity for him to make a play at the plate, but Michael Massey, one of those guys that, you had questions about the arm if he ever moved over to third base. That's why second was always the ideal fit for a guy that does have third base-like power. I'll be interested to see if that arm plays out in left field. We'll see him line up out there behind Seth Lugo later on today.
Last thing I've got for you, Vern, Seth Lugo, who is on the bump, I guess I'm accepting of what I assume will be the normal regression from Seth Lugo. Is there any reason to think like another 3 earned run season has come behind? This is not even to be a knock. I would expect that kind of ebb and flow out of a lot of starters. Lugo, I just kind of think we got to get back to the mean a little bit here.
Well, what does the mean look like? When you dive into the numbers, that fielding independent pitching still has a 3.5-like ERA. Listen, you dive into Lugo's career numbers. Yes, he just turned 35, but this guy for his career hasn't even thrown 850 innings. I likened him last year to Jeremy Guthrie in that, the savvy veteran presence that Jeremy Guthrie brought to the mound, where even if he didn't have his A stuff, he was still able to give the team a solid 6 innings. Seth Lugo has that without the wear and tear that Jeremy Guthrie had on that right arm. 850 innings at age 35. Keep in mind, Brady Singer, 7 years younger, has 150 fewer innings than Seth Lugo. So for as much as age and as eye-popping as his numbers were last season, sure, a slight regression. Maybe that ERA isn't even 3. Maybe it balloons to 3.5. But I certainly sit here today still expecting that Lugo to represent the Royals at the All-Star game, to still eat up 180-plus innings, to be one of the 15 best pitchers in the American League. That brain, his arsenal, is unmatched for someone his age. And again, without the kind of wear and tear on that right elbow, that right shoulder, we knew it was a steal of a contract midway through last season. And, boys, I mean, I honestly think that could just be the tip of the iceberg about when we look back on that 3-year deal that Lugo signed. It might go down as one of the 5 best contracts, 3 best contracts that this organization has ever inked.
Well, appreciate it, Vern. Make sure that, the sunscreen is good to go out there. I hope you're not sweating too much, the 85-degree day that you're about to have. So,
yeah, no, I'm sweating. Spilled coffee all over my shirt. I'm a mess, man, but we're having a good time out here.
There you go. All right, Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. He joins us every day throughout spring training. His hot stove show coming up on Thursday. Yeah, it's 76 out there right now. It's going to be 85 today.
I mean, it's nice outside today.
I'm just happy that it's 65 here, isn't it?
They told me my car's ready, so I get to go try to pick it up.
Is it actually ready, though?
Well, they claim it's ready again.
The sensors aren't going to go haywire?
I hope not. Should I ride with the top down all the way over there?
Yeah, you should. Absolutely. Yeah. Why, your last time with the Mustang.
You know, I didn't tell you. So yesterday, this is the second time this has happened in this car. It's like a Mustang V8 convertible, this like rental car I'm in.
Okay.
Again yesterday, the second time, I'm driving down to pick up my daughter from dance. So I'm just like on a 4-lane road, not a highway or anything. And some guy in some souped up Honda pulls up next to me and starts revving his engine. Yin, 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 yin. He's like trying to get me to race him. He's convinced, and he pulls ahead a little bit, and then slows back down, pulls back even. We get stopped at like a light. He tries one more time, pulls to the side of me, revs his engine. This man wanted to race me. He just sees me in this Mustang. He's like, well, this guy probably wants to race. Dude, I'm a 40-year-old dad in a rental car. I'm not your mark. Should I have given it a go? Should I gunned it one time? Teach him a lesson?
You should have. I'm also not surprised this happened, though. I test drove a Mustang over at Max Motors, like, I don't know, for 15 minutes a couple months ago. And so I'm in the car 15 minutes, and the same thing. People stare over at you and expect
They're trying to race you, expect you to
show them something with the vehicle, you know? instead of this rice car over there with your Honda that you were going up against, you know?
I thought that they were going to try to. Maybe I should have tested the challenge, you know? Find out whether or not it's my only chance to race. No one's ever going to race me.
You should have the top down, though.
Top down the whole way home?
Mm-hmm. Don't wear a hat. Your hat's going to fly off, but yeah.
I don't have a hat today.
Well, good. It'd fly off.
You wear it backwards, like at the lake, you know, down the jet ski.
You could do that.
I do that if I'm on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a hat at the lake last year. Tough living. Because you don't think about it. You're just like wearing it normal for a second. It goes
flying. Yeah, when you fly off a jet ski, you know, you're going to lose your sandals and everything, too. Trust me.
Is that how you lost your sandals?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you recover one?
Yeah, one of them. And then another one somebody else went back out and got.
Oh, that's good.
Again, the thing didn't flip or anything like that.
Yeah, but, just tossed you.
Yeah, got tossed pretty good.
They're designed to sometimes fall off of, you know? That's why they give you a whole harness.
Got a bad wave, just came in sideways on me. It's all good.
I think sometimes, mine's it's user error. I'm just not on a jet ski enough
I was driving the thing the whole weekend. No issues. Getting after it, and then on a Sunday morning, caught it wrong.
Got too comfortable.
Caught it, that's exactly. Got too comfortable on a Sunday morning. Sometimes if they pulled up to race Cody and looked over, they would just start laughing. Damn.
I don't look like someone who can race.
But no, if you drive,
I'm gonna find someone to race. If you drive a Mustang, home, you know?
I'm guessing if you drive a sports car, and whether you know if you're driving the Mustang or whatever, people are going to constantly expect you to like rev the car, or hey, you had a stop sign, and they want to race.
Cody's going to be driving to the Volkswagen.
We're like actively moving. I'm going to start doing that in the opposite car, my Tiguan.
You're going to be driving
to the Tiguan.
You'll be driving to the dealership with "Harden the Paint" by Waka Flocka on, or something like that. Just cranked up. You see Cody shades on. Oh yeah.
So if anyone wants to race,
drive the rental car like you stole it. Up next, we'll get to the 1 o'clock hour. We've got a random question of the day and a couple rumors out there involving one player that's retired that's not going to end up in the division, is he? We'll tell you who that is next.